You know how you know you're like a real football honk, like a real college football honk? Like when you're looking for that Friday night game, you know what I mean? Like before the Saturday madness, like you're looking for that weird, obscure, you know, that matchup in like Utah State versus the Air Force. Like if you really want some football, you desperate fiend, you freaking dirty beggar, here you go. There you go. Enjoy, you freaking worthless degenerate. It's true, though. It's true. It's all true. Oh, God. I don't know what. I think it's the weather. I think you just train like a Pavlovian dog that when the weather, the leaves start to fall a little and you're not a basic bitch. You know, you start scrambling for your puffy jacket or your polar fleece and your UGG boot or your Sorels or whatever. You know, when it's like, it's still 85 degrees out, but the leaves are falling. There's a little breeze, there's a little wind in the air, you know, and you're like, oh, it's college football. It's college. It's the weekend. It's not Sunday afternoon. It's college football. Like, so, I don't even like, there isn't one particular team. I don't put all my backing behind it. You know, I'll watch UCLA, but UCLA is kind of like, they're like USC light, right? Like, they're good. They've had some good teams. They've had some good players. Troy Aikman, you know, came from UCLA. By way of Oklahoma, but they're not. They've never had like that, you know, like that Matt Leinart, Reggie Bush, Caleb Williams, that kind of thing going on. You know, Mark Sanchez and all that crap. So you look for like you get like a weird. Like I say, Friday night, like they had a game on Friday night. It was Utah State and Air Force. Like, who wants to watch that? Like, who wants to watch any of the military colleges, right? Like, even though one of my favorite quarterbacks of all time, one of my early heroes when I was a young, like 9, 10 years old, one of my heroes was Roger Staubach. He went to the Naval Academy. But who wants to watch the Naval Academy? These guys are, like, in the service and shit, right? No, but I did watch, like, when I was 9 or 10, man, I watched every game, every fuck, like, if it was on, I was watching it, right? So I had, like, I had a little black and white set, you know, that you turn, there's a dial, there's no remote, black and white, I paid $60 for it, saved my money, and I would watch every game under the sun, particularly in bowl season, you know, there's like Fiesta Bowl, Sun Bowl, Peach Bowl, Rose Bowl. They had one up here, the Causeway Classic, where UC Davis played Sac State. Who'd they played some crazy. Who'd they play this weekend? It was like, oh, Stanford. Like, that's all bad. Yeah, I'm sure they got mollywopped. I'm not even gonna look at the score. They even had like a. I've talked about this before, but they would have a an exhibition game with the police versus the sheriffs called the Pig Bowl. I even watched that. Like, fuck it, it's football. Let's go. It's kind of sad. You know. But I do like, I subconsciously maybe I'm fascinated by like the machinations of it all. Like I watch this, I used to get really into like the spreads, right? Like before FanDuel, before DraftKings, before all that shit, there was like a bookie, you know, like that CD kind of, like in my case, it was like, it was like a pho joint, you know, where you go get pho, like in Stockton. you get some of the Vietnamese, Cambodian pho, and which was usually a front for a bookie joint. So you'd go in there, there'd be like this giant like projection screen TV with like Cambodian karaoke. You get the pho was great, but that's where you place your bets. There's usually some old Cambodian sitting out front in a chair, just kind of leaning against the wall. You know, maybe he's playing cards. I don't know. But back in the, you know, back when I was younger, like it was like spreads, point spreads. Like you'd see like 40 and a half points, you know. Like I was looking at, like I was like, well, who doesn't like a good underdog, right? Or a good like, you know. Like this past weekend was like number 3 Florida State versus Boston College. And the spread was like, oh, it was something like probably like 40 and a half points, right? Let me see. Let me see here. 40 and a half points. That's a lot of points. Let's see. Dun, dun, ba, dun, dun. Ba, 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 ba. I'm thinking of the Michigan versus Bowling Green was 40 and a half points, right? So I turned that game on. And it was like 7-3 in the second quarter or something. And then it was 7-6. So whoever's playing that spread, you know, they're giving 40 and a half points to Bowling Green, right? So that means they're up 46 and a half to 7 at that point. And Michigan's like ranked number 2, right? You know, this is like Jim Harbaugh territory, right? Like these guys, and it's, I guess it's legit. I mean, UCLA is ranked like 24th. I don't think that's legit. They're going to get roughed up by probably Utah State next weekend, or Utah rather. Is that who they play? What the hell? Let's see. No, Utah. They play number 12, Utah. How is Utah ranked 12th? Right? But even in the, even UCLA's game, North Carolina Central, they were given North Carolina Central 35 and a half points, and the final score was ridiculous, like 59-6, you know, and so they covered the spread. But if you really want to, boy, if you really want to be invested in a game, like, put some money on it in a bookie, with a bookie, like, that would be the most important thing you've ever seen, right? I mean, you don't care about anything but that game. It's rough. It's brutal. They ran 59-7. Like, that's not even a game. Is that a game? Yeah. So speaking of college, so we dropped my youngest off at UC Santa Cruz Friday. And this is the one that's, of course, it's the youngest. It's the baby. It's the one that's been wrapped in like bubble wrap, you know, like in cotton. Who didn't have, you know, and it went exactly how you would imagine it went, right? Like, she froze like a computer screen trying to download LimeWire, you know, in 2005, right? Like, she just didn't know. I don't know what she was thinking, but She got there a week early to move into the dorm, which wasn't even that bad. My mom wanted to go with, so her and I drove down, and then my youngest and then her mom drove down the night before, and then we met up with them. So they drove in Thursday afternoon. We came in Friday morning and just looked around the campus. And it's so funny because, like, going to Humboldt State, like, you definitely are introduced to, like, ideological, non-social norms or non-conventional norms, non-conventional ideologies, right? So, like, people that identify as, like, speed bumps or, you know, or call themselves sock, you know, that's pretty accepted. That's pretty par for the course at a lot of these places. And that's fine. Like, I think it's, and which is perfect for my youngest. Like, that's in her wheelhouse right there. But so I was trying to explain to her, like, you just gotta, you know, I don't have to tell you to have an open mind. You're going to be forced to, like, it's like, no better example is like when we were driving back from, like, the main hub of campus back to her dorm. And there was a girl walking down the side of the road with, like, high tops and a bikini carrying a palm frond. I thought, well, that's a great example. That's what I'm talking about, right? Like, that's normal. I knew a guy shaved half his head with a full beard named Gus Fieldhouse. His name was Gus Fieldhouse. He had a full head of hair and a beard, and he just shaved half it and walked around. Like, he rocked that look for, you know, a couple months. Old two-faced Gus, right? Like, that's what's up. Like, that's what's, like, that's college. But then you find, I don't know, you get to where you, after you get out of college and you hit the real world and life kind of has its way with you, and you start working and thinking in more, hopefully more practical terms and common sense. I would love to stay in college. I would love to stay in a biosphere where anything goes. And I told her that anything goes, like, whatever you can think up and imagine, to a point. I mean, there are, you know, this is Santa Cruz. I mean, this is like Humboldt State with money. That's what I think. Santa Cruz is Humboldt State with money, right? And so in my now being removed from college for 30 years at this point, you know, I've gotten to the point where I see through a lot of it, but I still indulge, but I still find there's the entertainment value in it. But at the same time, I'm also kind of like, now I'm thinking practically, like, and so I, you know, as I'm helping her move into the dorm, I would just tell her stuff like, you know, just like, she's got two roommates, one named Sage, of course, and one named Maddox. And who knows, Maddox could be anything, binary, non-binary. It could be an actual speed bump. I don't know. You don't know, right? And so I just simply told her, like, from my 30 years being out of college, just, you got three beds in here, and then you got three desks. And the other two roommates move in next week, but I just simply told her to knock out the biggest roommate early on to establish dominance, right? Just drop them. Just knock them out. They didn't seem to find the humor in that because it's Santa Cruz, right? But it's okay. I get it. And it's just me being a dad and me being, trying to break the, you know, break the little bit of, like, that tension, you know? Like, because when I left for college, like, I, you know, everybody was there to say goodbye, but I was at home. That was at home. And then I just simply hopped in my little VW Rabbit and drove off, you know, went up to school, you know, drove 6 hours, got there and was, you know, the first guy I talked to, he said, you got a girlfriend? I said, yeah. He goes, write her off. I'm like, yeah, Welcome to school. Welcome to college. Anything goes. So that was cool. And so here we are. You know, I checked on her the next day. She was, well, I called her on the way back, and she's like, I'm not in a good mental space right now to talk. Like, it's the best. It's funny. You know, this is it. This is like make or break. Let's go. Like, let's see what happens, right? It's part of that sticky wicket called life. But in other news, my damn Audi, I think my Audi's dead. The Audi died. I took it in Thursday, and it needs an engine. I blew another engine. I just go through engines, all right? And that's what happens, all right? And I don't know. I was trying to tell my boy, I said, how lucky you are to work at VW. Now you got to find a tech over there. You got to find a guy in shop that likes to work on shit in his garage. And that's the only way we're going to get out of this one, because I'm not spending 10 grand on a new motor, you know? So to be continued on the Audi thing, I don't know what I'm going to do. I don't know what I'm going to do. I would like to park it under a crane and then have that crane drop that big giant metal ball right on top of the hood. It'd be fun. Send it off kind of in a ceremonial goodbye, right? So, and that's the saga of the Audi. And so what else is, tell us what else you got going. Like, I mean, stop boring us with like your personal shit. Like nobody cares. Well, okay. All right, fine. All right. So even though it's transitioning to fall, there's a lot going on in the world. There's a new American record in the mile. I think it was Saturday. Yeah, Saturday. That guy, that motherfucker from Norway, Jakob Ingebrigtsen, strikes again at the Prefontaine meet. I think it's got to be one of the last Diamond League meets. Was going after the world record in the mile. Like, this guy just can't be stopped, right? And he won the race. Barely, but he won the race. He beat Jared Nagusi, who now is the new American record holder in the mile at 3:43. What did he run? 3:43. Well, specifically, Ingebrigtsen ran 3:43.73, which is 0.6 seconds slower than the world record. World record's 3:43.13 by Hakim El Garouj. But he almost had it. He ran 3:43.73. So just over half a second off the world record. But Nagusa closed hard. Well, it was tough. It was a long stretch, but he only got beat by 20, almost a quarter second. So he ran 3:43.97. So he is the new American record holder. But a deep field. You've got a 3:42. So first and second were at 3:43. Second and third were at 3:47. Cole Hawker comes in at 3:48. Like, that's fucking strong. But that's also sixth place. But fuck, man. So he almost broke the world record. Ingebrigtsen, after torching the 2 mile world record and the 2000 meter record. Like, this guy's phenomenal. Like, because back in the day, it used to be, like, at least in the 80s, it seemed, and it might be just my personal stance, but the milers were the milers. The miler might dip down to like an 800 meter for like a tune-up, maybe to get some more strength or speed training in under him. But they didn't stray much beyond the mile. Sometimes on the rare occasion a 2,000 meter race, but that, like I say, they don't run that race very often. That's a weird race. That's a rare one. But the milers always stayed in their lane. It was always Steve Cram, Steve Ovette, Sebastian Coe, Steve Scott, Jim Spivey. These guys were all strict milers, you know. They used to, like in college, they would run cross country, 10K. They would at dual meets or at conference meets, they'd step up into maybe a 5,000 meter or something, which is not very often. But now it's like you got these guys that are jumping up in increments in different distances. So the pure miler doesn't really exist anymore. But it's still that category is really still one of the more exciting races, the mile, for whatever reason. More so than the 1500. Even though the rest of the world's in kilometers, the mile, of course, the 4-minute barrier, broken first by Sir Roger Bannister at 3:59. And then all the subsequent, you know, legendary performances and benchmarks for the first high schooler to break 4, Jim Ryan, back in the 60s. And, you know, now pretty soon it's going to be the first, now we're going to wait on the first woman to break the 4-minute barrier. Because right now, Faith Kipyegon of Kenya is the world record holder at 4:07. So there's a ways to go, but the mile stands out. But I always found it fascinating, like really cool when milers would run cross country, longer distances, step up into a 5K or a 10K or, you know, that strength training. Like, that's what a lot of the New Zealanders did, because those guys were fucking hard, man. Like, that was, those guys, like John Walker, Peter Snell, Herb Elliott, these guys were like, they were running like 200 miles a week, and they were 800 and 1500 meter specialists. John Walker would jump up into a 5K every so often. I'm sure they ran cross country, but the New Zealanders were really the only ones that ever kind of were like, I don't know, kind of training above their expectation, right? Milers don't run a lot of, they don't do heavy distances. Like Ingebrigtsen, he probably does if I had to guess, he probably does 85 to 90 miles a week, which is a lot, but for a miler, that's kind of where you need to be. All those guys, Steve Scott, you know, when he was at Irvine, he was a pure miler, but he also ran cross country. So he probably ran 70, 80 miles a week. Doug Padilla, not a miler, he's a 5K runner. 35 miles a week, 35. Same with Henry Marsh. These guys, 35 to maybe 50, sometimes 60 miles a week. For a middle distance, 3,000 meter steeplechase, 5,000 meter, like that's low, man. But you lose, see, the guys that have that huge base that are running 100 mile weeks, they're hard to take down. But anyway, so that's what's up. Ingebrigtsen almost broke the world record in the mile. Like, what if that go? Oh, Jesus, fucking guy. And in other news, there was one other thing I was gonna touch on. That was good old Elon Musk. Love him or hate him, because I think he's fascinating. But he's got a new biography coming out. I keep seeing like little links to stories about him, takeaways from the biography. I think that it came out a few days ago, a week, 3-4 days ago. last week sometime. And it was done by Walter Isaacson, the same guy that did the Steve Jobs biography, which I'd started a long time ago. I'd kind of already known enough about Steve Jobs where it's like, I don't know. I don't find Steve Jobs as interesting as Musk, but he definitely was. But my impression of Steve Jobs is like, this is a dude just like, hey, I'm going to invent this idea. Now, I'm going to get other people to make it, but I'm going to invent the idea. But Musk, he does it the other way. He does the shit. Like, he is the engineer. Like, he in my opinion, is a modern day kind of a Howard Hughes. Meaning, I think Howard Hughes saw himself not as the billionaire movie director, magnet, like business tycoon, more so than he saw himself as an aviator and all things relating to all things aeronautical, doing big defense contracts, building helicopters, planes, flying them, first and foremost, even though he had all that money. And his money came from his father. Howard Hughes' dad created one of the great oil drilling bits of all time and was just stupid, stupid rich, right? And then when he died, Hughes got all that money. But Musk is like self-made. Came from nothing, really. And but sees himself as an engineer. Created PayPal, wrote the code for it. This is the guy who tried to get a job at Netscape, a search engine, and they didn't even hire him, right? Fascinating. It's just, the dude is just, I mean, say what you want about him. Everybody's got kind of, he's very polarizing, and he's very infantile. There's no denying that. But that's what makes it entertaining, is when you give somebody $250 billion, and it's somebody that's kind of, has like Peter Pan syndrome, and with the first million that he made, bought a Bugatti, and before he had it even insured, wrecked it, totaled it. I love those guys. I love people like that. It's the best. He's fascinating. I think deep down he considers himself an engineer, more so than a billionaire, tycoon, magnet, whatever. But very complex. On the spectrum, probably has that Asperger's. We all got a little Asperger's. What I don't understand is his obsession with the letter X. There's something really deep and subconscious going on there, because he just changed the Twitter logo to X or something. I don't know. I'm not on Twitter. But his son's name is X, or it's short for, or his son's name is like, it's his son's name is like the Google algorithm, right? Or some kind of equation, but they just call him X for short, right? Then he's got SpaceX. I think he wanted to call PayPal X, or I think that was his company that merged with PayPal and became PayPal, but he's just obsessed with X. I don't know. So I might just get the book for that, just to figure out what the hell's going on. I mean, it is a fascinating story, doesn't talk to his father, really complicated, but who else, like, what other business tycoons are anywhere near as interesting, right? He hosted Saturday Night Live on my dad's birthday, of all dates, right? May 8th. Strange, huh? But, or maybe not that strange. I don't know. But he's host, like, that's fascinating. Like, the dude works 90 hours a week. He's fathered 10 kids now. And he's been divorced several times, twice to the same person. Somebody that just can't kind of keep it together like that socially, I guess, or relationship-ishly, I guess. Yet has 10 kids, has the time to host Saturday Night Live, run three, four companies, however many he runs. And then when SpaceX goes public, he's going to be, like, without question, the richest person on paper in the world, you know? But that's interesting. That's going to be just a fascinating... I'm sure it's a fascinating read. So... But he's just a... You know, he's just... He's... I know he's very polarizing. I understand that. I get it. People want to kind of imbue him with their take on him, but I don't know. I don't know if he cares. I don't know if he's I'm just fascinated by the fact that he sold all of his houses and he just crashes at his friend's place, you know, because he doesn't want to have he calls it an attack vector to have a fixed residence, right? And what that means, I'm not quite sure. An attack vector meaning like a literal attack vector, or just the fact that previously, as you owned five houses, like, it's easy to talk shit about somebody that has all this ridiculous wealth. Oh, he's got five houses. How environmental could he possibly be if he's got this and that, and he's, you know, and initially his goal was to save the planet in some weird, naive way, but there are people that are kind of, they have that halo effect, you know, and Steve Jobs was one of them. And now this guy, Elon Musk, I don't give a whole lot of credence to, like, the Bezos, the Jeff Bezos. These guys they got lucky. I mean, Jesus, Amazon just, you just sell, all you do is sell shit. Like, there's nothing innovative about it. But yeah, with Musk, it's like, I think originally he wanted to, like, the whole notion of electric vehicles in an effort to, clean up the environment and pull carbon from the atmosphere is genuinely, like, he just did it with style. He did it with a very stylish car, you know. Now it's like this big, there's this huge, like, now everyone's piling on. There's this big backlash on the EV movement. Oh, it's creating an even bigger environmental disaster because we've got to mine for the minerals and the lithium. But where were these same people that were, you know, when the first hybrids came out, right? I mean, there's a trillion Priuses out there with the same lithium ion battery system that all the Teslas have. But nobody was talking about that, right? The partial zero emission vehicle, the supplemental lithium ion batteries that are in every fucking Prius, and there's a trillion Priuses. Like, nobody talks about that shit, right? So I get the attack vector. I get that, you know, it's kind of like the crabs in a bucket type thing, you know? One's trying to get out, the rest of them are pulling them back in, right? But, so I don't know. It's like the entertainment value. I don't really dig in on one side of the one tribe or the other, right? I'm all about the entertainment. I'm all about, like, I want to see some crazy, it's like watching college football. I want to see some crazy shit, right? I can't get behind Florida State, nor can I get behind, you know, Boston College, but I'll watch the game. It was a good game. Although Boston College, the wheels kind of fell off, but the end. But, you know, I am. My political affiliation, as if you cared, but is whatever the Grateful Dead would have been. That's who I'm affiliated with. Like whatever their stance is on politics, and I'm sure I know what it is. It's what mine is. Right? So there you have it. So that's what's up. And that's what's going on. And I hope you're doing well. And I hope everybody's doing well. And it's kind of fall. It's kind of happening. It's all coming together. College football, big spreads, UCLA, fucking imposters and new biographies and world record attempts in the mile. And oh my God, lions and tigers and bears. Oh my, what? Oh shit, here we go. Let's do this. So anyway, it's beginning of the week. Let's get it going. Let's get a head of steam going. Let's get a good momentum. Let's get a big kind of a snowball effect going. Starting today. Let's go. Let's make it happen. Let's get it to where, you know, by the time Friday comes through, you're a force to reckon with, right? You've built up such a head of steam that nobody can stop you. Become ungovernable. Become uncommon amongst the uncommon, right? That's what I'm talking about. Uncommon amongst the uncommon. Be ungovernable. And on that note, I'll let you go. I'll talk at you later. Arrivederci, babies.